Welcome back to the program, everybody. It's about 7:15 on your Saturday evening. I'm Justin Miller. And as promised, we are finally going to have the interview with Prince's first producer, Pepe Willie. And here he is right now. Pepe, I want to thank you very much for coming on to the program to do this interview with us tonight.
Thank you so much, Justin. It's my pleasure.
So my first question to you is, before you met Prince, how did you start working as an independent producer and music business consultant in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area?
Oh, okay. Well, that's easy. You know, I have a family history in entertainment, and my uncle is a founding member of Little Anthony and the Imperials. And they did songs like Shimmy Shimmy Coco Bop, Tears on My Pillow, Going Out of My Head, Hurt So Bad. And I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, and that's where they're from. And so I learned all my business stuff from these guys, along with going to being a gopher at the rock and roll shows that Murray Decay gave in Brooklyn, New York. So I used to run to the store. I was 15 years old at the time. And I used to run to the store for the likes of Marvin Gaye, Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder, The Miracles,
wow.
Robinson, Patti LaBelle, Dionne Warwick, Jay and the Americans, The Righteous Brothers, Dionne and the Belmonts, Wayne Newton. I mean, all the acts that were coming up during that time in the early 60s. I was going to the store for these guys, you know, getting them cheesecakes and hamburgers and french fries and sodas.
Hey, at least you got into the crowd one way or another, and at a young age, too, at 15. So,
absolutely. I just recently saw Stevie Wonder at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 25th anniversary concert at the Madison Square Garden. And, you know, and he remembered. He remembered. I went up to him. I said, Stevie, because I was backstage because, you know, Lil Anthony Imperials performed there also. And I said, Stevie, man, you remember when I used to go to the store for you at the Murray Decay show? And he says, oh, wow. He says, you remember that? You remember that? Because that was so long ago. You're talking like 62, 63, you know, 64, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I met writers, you know, big-time songwriters like Teddy Randazzo, who wrote I'm on the Outside Looking In and Going Out of My Head, It Hurts So Bad and Take Me Back. And I learned from the best. I started writing lyrics, and he used to critique my work. So I became, you know, a good writer. Later on, when they performed at the Lil Anthony Imperials, when they performed at the Copacabana in New York, the famous nightclub there, I met a woman there named Chantel, which happened had been Prince's cousin, Prince's first cousin.
Yes, actually, that was my next question for you.
Okay.
Ironically, so you were first introduced to Prince, and she ended up being your wife. I'm correct as far as that goes, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And this was in the mid 1970s when you went to Brooklyn for your wedding via their band Grand Central Station. What was your first impression of Prince and his band?
Well, when I first came to Minneapolis in 74, I went to Chantel's father was giving a ski party, and Grand Central was the band that was playing for entertainment. So we had Prince on guitar, we had Morris Day on drums, we had Andre Simone playing bass, Linda Anderson, Andre's sister, playing keyboards, and William Dowdy playing congas and percussion. And I thought that the band was pretty good. They were playing cover stuff, you know, like Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know, tunes and tunes that were current. And I liked them. So Morris Day's mom, LaVon, was their manager at the time. And I believe Prince was around 15, 15 and a half. And I went up to Morris's mom and says, hey, I would love to work with this group. And she said, sure. So about a week later, we got a rehearsal spot up in the attic of, I forgot whose house that was. It probably was Morris's house, Morris Day's mom's house. And we went up in the attic, and we started rehearsals. And I found out that not only did Prince play guitar, but he was also showing Linda Anderson what chords to play on the keyboard.
Wow.
And I was looking at this guy, and I'm going like, oh, so he plays keyboards too. You know?
Starting to notice his talent coming out to life.
Absolutely. Then he went over, and he says, Andre, let me hold your bass for a second. Andre took off his bass, and You know, he picked up the bass and he started playing it what he wanted Andre to play.
Wow.
So halfway through, Andre, who was just as talented, said, oh, I know what you want, and took the bass back. And this time I'm going like, wait a minute. What is going on here? This guy plays bass. He plays keyboard. I said, and Andre, he was playing bass, and he also played guitar that I knew of.
Oh,
so
wow.
At that time, my group, 94 East, was recording in Cookhouse Recording Studios. And I had asked Prince, I said, man, you know, you got to play guitar with me. I said, have you ever been in a recording studio before? And he goes like, no, you know, he never had. And, you know, and I was teaching these guys the business. So I told him that you have to join the musicians union. You get union scale for, you know, recording studios and things like that.
So, yeah.
You know, we hired him and we had five songs and he played guitar on those five songs.
And that's one of the Cookhouse 5 session CDs that you were so gracious enough to send to me. That's going to be one of the CDs that we're going to be giving away in the CD contest later on.
Oh, man, that's great.
I took a listen to those songs, and I thought, wow, these are fantastic songs. So I honestly can't wait to give it away. We had an overwhelming response of people email me in. Let's continue on with the interview, and then we'll get to that part.
Absolutely.
So my third question to you is that you began working with the members of Grand Central Station when they were only 15, 16 years old, which was in the mid-1970s. 1970s, as you stated, teaching them song construction and facts of the business, which you also just stated as well, too.
Right.
How did they take in every lesson you taught them, and how did they teach you to be a better producer?
Okay, well, first of all, oh, wow, this, you know, what happened was when I was mentoring these guys and telling them about, you know, my experiences in the business and the record business, about publishers and managers and record labels and producers and A&R guys and the record labels and how to get record deals and construction of music and things like this. I mean, they took it to heart. I mean, because they wanted to make it. Here, I'm in a small town here in Minnesota, and there was nothing much going on here. I think Bob Dylan was had came out of here, and Kenny Rogers in the first edition came out of here. But no really good R&B acts had it came out of here yet. And Prince himself took it. I mean, this guy soaked it in. You know, like kids, you know, soak in stuff and they learn things so quick. And
yeah.
You're so amazed at how they soak up all this knowledge. And that's how Prince was. I mean, he just soaked it up. This guy would not be denied, okay? He would not be denied his future or what he wanted.
That's a good attitude to have.
You know, it was wonderful. I mean, because, you know, I worked hard. I worked really hard. And when Prince started learning from me and Andre and Morris Day and everybody else during that time, even Cynthia Johnson from Lips Incorporated, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, you know, they had a flight time bus called Flight Time, and they used to drive around. They were a little older, maybe a year or two older than Prince. So they had a bus that they would tour in with their band around the Twin Cities and stuff. But Prince, he would never take breaks, okay?
Wow.
He would never take breaks. When I would say, okay, guys, let's take five, let's take a break, let's go downstairs and, you know, have some cake or some Kool-Aid or some water or something, anything, you know. And he stayed upstairs in the attic. He would never take a break.
I think that that's probably a really huge key factor in his success.
Oh, absolutely. And for everyone, anyone that's up and coming who wants to get into this industry, no matter if they're a musician, a singer, a manager, producer, whatever, you know, take a note on work ethics. You know what I mean? You know, really take a note at it. I mean, I work 10 hours a day sometime in the studio, you know, and I'm exhausted after that. The Revolution was formed in my house in South Minneapolis. They had open auditions. There was an audition and guitar players and all these keyboard players and drummers and stuff like that. And once they found and got the band together, they had regular rehearsals from 10 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. Okay, so at 10 o'clock at night, I figured everybody was gone. Okay, everybody went home. And one evening, I tried to get in touch with Prince after they had left. It must have been like 10:30, 11 o'clock, and I couldn't get him on the phone. I was going like, gee, man, what's going on? So I drove over to his house, and he had just got signed with Warner Brothers at that time. I'm knocking on the door and didn't get any answer, and I heard this faint beating, just some kind of beats and stuff, and I walked around the back. And down in the basement, I looked through the window, and there was Prince playing drums.
Oh, my God.
You know, and this is after 10, you know, from 10 to 10.
Yeah.
You know, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. This guy came home and just was working more for hours and hours and hours playing drums. He would not be denied. But another thing I learned from these guys in Prince was picking up another instrument, because I came in playing guitar, and then I started playing keyboards.
Well, that's fantastic. It sounds like such a great story. On your website, you describe your relationship with Prince as comparable to the relationship between teacher and apprentice. And what do you feel has been the major reason that this relationship worked out the way it did, and why?
Well, there were several other people in Minnesota who felt that they knew the business, and they came around and they talked with Grand Central. This is before me. But when I came along and I started talking to these guys about the business of music and giving them information how they can achieve career goals and stuff, they listened to me.
Well, that's fantastic. And in the end, it all proved out to be very successful for Prince and them
too. Absolutely. I feel that if I didn't come into Minneapolis at the time that I came in, it would have been a lot different. That's all I know. It would have been a whole lot different. I mean, because I hand-carried Prince through a lot of business things that companies would have taken advantage of him.
Okay? Yeah.
You know, and I prevented that.
You formed the group 94 East and signed with Polydor in 1977 while hiring Prince as a side musician. Did you ever think at the time that this would help to propel Prince's career even more and amount him to what he is today, and why?
What, you mean playing with us before, you know, when we were signed with Polydor?
Yes.
Well, I knew that he was impressed with that, because at that time, during that time, you could go to the record labels and knock on their door. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that now. They got security, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And how I just went about it and explained to Prince that you have to have material that rivaled other songs on radio. And the only way you're going to get that quality is going into a recording studio and recording. So by the time we had got signed with Polydor, and I came back to Minneapolis, and we went into Sound 80 to record 1015 and Fortune Teller, Prince was just coming out of the studio finishing up his demo. So he had already learned that he had to go in the studio and record his own music and then start shopping it. I was in New York for like 6 months. So the time that I was in New York for the 6 months, Prince had really stepped up his game and found Chris Moon and Owen Husney, who helped him out, and had studios that he went into and recorded. And they took him under his wing as far as taking him into a recording studio and letting him do his own thing. At that time, Prince started doing his own thing. Nobody else was helping him in the studio.
Wow.
And so when we came into Sound 80 and we saw Prince, and Prince says, "Hey, man, what's up? What are you guys doing?" And I said, "Yo, man, we get ready to record our single," because we were signed and he wasn't. And he was going like, "Oh, man." He says, "Can I play on it?" And I was going like, "Yeah, man, come on." You know, because I was co-producing with the great funk brother, Hank Cosby. Hank Cosby was one of the original funk brothers from Motown, who had wrote and produced songs with Stevie Wonder, including For Once in My Life and My Sharia Moore.
Wow. And on that note, we're going to move on to Prince's next step when he first signed with Warner Bros. You helped him through the complications during that time period, as you said, by letting him use your house for 6 months as a place to audition new band members and practice in preparation for his first tour. Describe how both you as a producer and Prince as a musician grew as people in those 6 months that you spent close together like that.
What happened was, I was the whole time when he had got signed and he's putting his band together and he was auditioning his band members, he knew what kind of band he wanted. Okay, so
yeah.
I wasn't going to interfere in that whatsoever. The only thing that I was concerned about was the fact that his business was straight and that the people that was working with him were doing their jobs. So after we had produced one of his shows at Capri Theater, and Warner Brothers executives came in from California, and they was viewing Prince's act to find out if he was ready to go on tour. And Warner Brothers felt that he wasn't quite ready yet, and Prince was totally upset about that because he thought that he was ready. And so I told him, I said, well, Prince, man, you know, all you got to do is just go right back to the drawing board. You know, don't even sweat it. You know, just, you know, we just got to work a little harder and stuff. And we're almost there. You know, we just have to work harder.
Yeah.
So Prince continued working, and the band continued rehearsing. And one day I had went and talked with his manager and asked him to do a certain chore for Prince, and he didn't do it. He just says, well, you know, he would disagree with what I'm about to say, but he had said that, well, you know, why should I, what am I supposed to be doing? Am I supposed to quit my job right now to try to work with a guy who probably is not going to make it?
Wow.
You know.
I bet he regrets saying that now.
I mean, I didn't make this up. He would deny this today, but I didn't make this up, you know, and that's what he said. And I told him at the time, I said, well, look, man, I'm not going to let him go out here and get screwed up, you know.
Yeah.
And then he yelled at me, and he goes like, well, Peppy, he says, well, you manage him then. You manage him. And I told him, I said, look, I am not a manager. I said, but I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm going to find one for him. And I left, you know, the office, and I went to Prince, and I said, you got to get rid of this guy. He's gone. So Prince let him go, and he'll tell you he quit, but Prince let him go. And a friend of mine who was, and now we're going to go back to where I was working with Lou Anthony and Imperials and all these guys. Now, during the time that Lou Anthony Imperial's heyday, they played places in Jamaica.
Oh, wow.
Okay?
Yes.
And they picked up this young kid named Don Taylor, and he became their valet, you know, going to the store for them, fixing their clothes and all the stuff that I used to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so they brought him in, a poor kid from Jamaica, over into the States, and he started working with these guys. Now, to make a long story longer, later on in years, this same guy, right, managed Diana Ross, Marvin Gaye, and now at this time he was managing Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Wow, that's okay? Amazing, yes.
And Don was a personal friend of mine. He knew my family and everybody else. So at the time when Prince had fired his manager, I called Don. You know, and I says, Don, I says, I got a kid. He's signed with Warner Brothers right now, and we need a manager. So Don goes, well, how's his tax situation? I'm going like, I don't know. What do you do about his tax situation? You know, so he sent us airline tickets and stuff, and he flew us to Miami, got us hotel rooms and stuff, and him and Prince went out the next day, and they talked business. Just before that, it was like, that took about 30 days, so I did manage Prince for 30 days. And I went with him to North Carolina to a radiothon when kids brought in cans of food, and then they would get an autograph album of Prince. Cameo was there, too. They was there at the same time, so they were signing autographs.
That was a fantastic story that you just told for all of our listeners.
Thank you.
I want you to describe for us Prince's first concert, his first ever concert that he performed in. How was the audience response to his talent, and how did it shape him as well as shape yourself?
Okay, well, the first concert was at the Capri Theater, and we produced that show, and that was to bring in the Warner Brothers people to find out if he was ready or not. So Prince, and they said that he wasn't. But later on after that, he was ready, and he came to Minneapolis on his second album and did I Want to Be Your Lover album, and he performed at, was at the State Theater, I believe it was, and he did very, very well. And at that time, he was a star right then. You know, we all went backstage after the performance to congratulate him, and you know, he had everything set up the way that it was supposed to have been set up. His room was set up. He had all his security and people around him, and he was a star that day.
it doesn't get any better than that. Thank you very much for sharing that with us, Pepe.
No problem, no problem.
Now, we talked about this earlier when you first called in, but just to bring it up again for our listeners, in March 1995, you discovered five songs that were recorded by Prince when he was just 16-year-old, which was commonly referred to now as the Cook House Five Sessions because of the place that they were recorded in. That's where the name came from.
Right, the name of the studio.
Describe the significance of these tracks and how their discovery helped to pave the path for them to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Archive Hall of Fame.
Okay, me and Morris Day one day were riding around in just hanging out. And we ran into Prince, okay?
Uh-huh.
And we didn't want to run into Prince because he didn't party like us, you know. But we ran into him. We all have the same friend. So he ran over to the car, and he throws this cassette in the car, and he goes, like, here, I'm going to record this on one of my albums. And then he goes. He leaves. Prince runs away, you know. So we put the cassette in the car, and it was one of the songs from the Cook House Five.
Wow.
It was If You See Me, but it was Prince's version, and he called it Do Yourself a Favor. It was speeded up a little bit, and he was doing some really good stuff with it. It was definitely updated, and it was funny. It was funky. I mean, it was fantastic. So, I said, oh, cool. You know, that's great, you know. But he never did. He never put it on any of his albums and stuff, you know. So I went like, oh, okay. So when I went to New York and I did Minneapolis Genius in 1985 with me, Prince, and Andre Simone, Jesse Johnson had called me up. And he says, I want to do that track. And he was doing his second album, Shockadelica.
Yes.
And I told him, I said, yeah, go ahead and do it. So he recorded Do Yourself a Favor in the same feel as Prince did it, because he loved it and stuff, and we did really well with it. It was done really well. So after that, in 1995, we put out Symbolic Beginnings, and that had all of the Cook House Five in it. It had all the Minneapolis Genius, plus a few more songs that Prince and I, Andre, had recorded after we got let go from Polydor. And, you know, we just continued on from there. But I was sitting in my house, and I got a telephone call. And it was a chopper, this guy named Chopper, who was an engineer at Cook House Recording Studios. Now, Cook House was renamed Creation. So it was some new owners took over.
Yeah.
So he called me, and he says, Pepe, he says, you don't know me. My name is Chopper. He says, but I got one of your masters here, and it's marked Pepe Willie, Do Not Use. And the date on it was 1975. You know, and I was happening to be looking for that, and I didn't know where it was. I couldn't find it. I didn't think about it or whatever. And he said, you want me to throw it out, or you want to come and get it? You know, and I says, oh, no, I'm going to come and get it. So I drove over there as fast as I could and picked it up, and the tape was falling apart by the time we got it and tried to play it, and we had to have it, you know, baked, as they say. And then we made a copy of it at Prince's studio at Paisley Park. We made a copy of it. Prince was out of town. We made a copy of it. You know, and that's how that happened. You know, we got those tapes, which was really good, you know.
That's fantastic. And once again, we're going to be giving one of the copies autographed by Pepe and his two band members themselves of the Cook House Five Sessions. That's going to be the last CD that we're going to give away. We're going to give away the first three that you sent me and then the Cook House Five Session. But just a great piece of history to own. And actually, my last question to you now is I just wanted to bring up the Cook House ringtones that are available online for download. Could you describe
right,
that for
not
us?
Not as of yet. We're going to, along with the Cook House 5 that's going into the Rock Hall in May of 2011, we're going to put out the ringtones.
Okay. You know,
we just finished EQing them. Me and Matt Fink. Matt Fink helped me out, the doctor who played keyboards with Prince for 12 years, you know.
Yes.
And so we EQ'd them, and we get ready to put them out. And this is going to be really great because I soloed out, my guitar. I was playing rhythm guitar. I soloed out the bass player's parts and stuff because he did real well, and especially soloed out Prince's guitar, and so that all his fans who want to know what this guy was playing when he had just turned like 17 years old, you know, and so they're going to be hearing his stuff, and they're going to be trying to play all of that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
We're gonna put that out, and you know, we wrote this song together, Prince and I, called "Just Another Sucker" when we got let go from Polydor, and Prince was more upset that we got let go from that label than I was. You know, and he told Andre, he says, "Man, he says we going back in the studio with Pepe." You know what I mean? And I didn't know where I was going to get this money from to go in the studio, but I called the studio up, Sound 80, and I says, okay, book some time for me, Prince and Andre, coming in. They booked it. It was costing me $100 an hour. I didn't know how I was going to pay for it, but I booked it anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So me, Prince and Andre, after a couple of weeks of rehearsing and writing songs of what we were going to put down, went into the studio and recorded Loving Cup, that was written by me and another friend of mine named Ike Page, and me and Prince wrote Just Another Sucker, and then I wrote Dance to the Music of the World, and we recorded those three songs in Sound 80.
Well, that's fantastic. So it's a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I have your autograph that you personally gave me too. I
there
love
you
it.
Go.
I'm gonna.
That's right. Just for you, baby. That's it. Justin Miller.
I love it. I'm going to put it up. I'm going to frame it and put it up in my room and cherish it forever. I can't thank you enough for sending that to me as well, too.
Great. And then, you know, all your listeners can also go to pepemusic.com. They can go to 94 East on Facebook, and they can look at the photos and videos and stuff that we've done in places where we've played. We just did a show for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame benefit concert out in Raleigh, North Carolina. This year, and that's up there, and we did some other stuff too. So
awesome. And Pepe, I wanted to thank you very much for taking the time to come on to the program tonight and talking with us. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Anytime. It was a pleasure. And to all your listeners, you better listen to Justin because he knows what he's talking about. JM the DJ, baby. Y'all better listen to him.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Pepe. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a fantastic evening.
All right. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.